UK Wine Show, show number 85. Sustainable viticulture with viticulturalist Greg Hay from Peregrine. On this week's show,
it's about maintaining the integrity of the land in a way or a form that is beneficial to the land and beneficial to the grapes and beneficial to the consumers. It's about changing your whole thinking process.
And in the news this week, the UK gets exemption from planting ban, glass bottles in short supply, and Oz wine exports continue to grow.
G'day! Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 85 for the 11th of January 2008. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're talking with Greg Hay from Peregrine Winery in Otago on sustainable viticulture. I recorded the show a couple of weeks ago while in New Zealand, and I finally got back home to Old Blighty on Wednesday. So I'm editing this show now at 3 in the morning. Quite a reasonable time if you're in New Zealand, but it's fairly early from a UK point of view. The interview with Greg is from a much longer interview I did on Otago and its subregions, which I'll be putting out in a couple more weeks. But before we get into the interview, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. UK wine producers have got the New Year's resolution they were hoping for, exemption from the EU-wide planting ban. The ban has been extended until 2015 for other European producers and would have stopped UK producers from any further planting of vines once production exceeded 3.3 million bottles a year over a five-year average. The UK Vineyards Association, led by Bob Lindo, lobbied against these restrictions. They argued that the UK industry is unsubsidised and is fulfilling the EU Commission's objectives to make the EU wine industry more competitive. The UK has been producing more quality wine, and demand from domestic and overseas market has never been higher, especially for its world-class sparkling wine. Next up, a glass shortage has been causing concern for the wine industry in Europe. The shortfall of bottles has left some winemakers struggling to meet orders, and although glass factories are working at full capacity, it's not certain when the situation will be resolved. According to British Glass, the shortage is due to a number of factors, including the early harvest in parts of Europe, the rebuilding of furnaces, and a reduction in capacity due to mergers between several glass companies. The factories are working 24/7, 365 days a year to build up stock levels. And as far as the UK market's concerned, the shortage may impact on the development of bulk importing, and some smaller players are already looking at alternative packaging materials. And finally this week, it's good news for our friends down under, as value growth for Australian wine exports in 2007 exceeded volume growth. Their exports were up 6% in value terms compared to 3% growth in volume. And it's good to know the UK is still the top destination for Australian wine. We're quaffing a massive 290 million litres a year and spending nearly £443 million on Aussie wine. Don't forget you can get more detail on these news stories on the news homepage of our website 3050.co.uk. That's it from me. Back over to you, Chris.
Cheers, Jane. It's good news that the UK wine industry has been exempt from the planting ban, but what is going on in the EU? I'm not going to say any more. For those of you who regularly listen to the show, you know my views on heavy-handed regulation and central control in a free market. Except to say, the second story, the bottle shortage story, has been kicking around now for ages. We've been trying to get it into the news for a long time, but we haven't found anybody who would be willing to comment on record. Certainly the merging of production and the withdrawal of capacity has certainly created a shortage and effectively increased the price. Whether this was deliberate by the few producers left or whether it was just a happy coincidence for them, I'm not sure. It certainly will encourage producers to look at other forms of packaging other than glass. From the point of sustainability and recycling, that's probably a good thing. I mentioned last week that we covered the poll and I'd be putting the results out now. So the question was, when you purchase a bottle of wine, which of the following is the most important? The results were brand name or producer that you know and like, only 8%. Country of origin or region, 23%. Grape variety was 27% of people. Price was only 6%. A recommendation was 11%. The wine has won an award, 4%, so very little there. And the wine was right for the occasion, 21%. The results were a bit surprising, with only 6% saying that price is the most important. This does fly in the face of what I hear in the trade press. And surprisingly, the brand name also accounts only for 8% on the people we polled. I'm a bit worried about that because you get a lot of marketeers saying that price is really important with a lot of consumers and brand name is king. And I know the marketeers make their money by selling their marketing to brand owners. I'm not saying anything other than I'm a bit surprised by those results. But I do think there is some correlation with the answers. For example, many people look at Australia as a big country being, but it's also marketed as brand Australia. The awards, again, was a bit of a surprise, but I think it's partly to do with people not really understanding awards or which awards are important. But the general public are probably not aware of these, let alone understanding how important a trophy is versus a gold and what they mean. I think Simon Waghorn back in show 57 best described it when he said that awards help you to get the wine into an establishment, i.e. it opens the door. A sommelier will look at a wine if it's won a big award. You may not be able to get it into the shop or into a restaurant without an award. Next up, we have the interview with Greg Hay. It was recorded at his Otago winery in New Zealand. Hi, I'm here with Greg Hay from Peregrine Wines. How are you, Greg?
Very good, thank you. Nice to see you both.
Excellent. We're recording here in your wool shed with a few starlings in the background, so you might hear a bit of noise.
Yeah, well, it's a natural component of life in a winery area, so a little bit of chitter-chatter goes on in the background.
Not a problem. And it's quite nice given that you're named after local falcon.
The winery is, not me personally.
No.
the winery itself is named after the Peregrine Falcon, which is the North American European falcon, which is the one that they have in the UK. Our own one is endemic to New Zealand, so it's actually only ours, called the Kererea.
One of the key things about Central, I think, climatically, is the humidity or the lack of. Yep. It's quite dry.
Very dry. It's the driest part of the country. It's just the elevation, and as I say, it's quite unique. So just that low humidity means we actually run, most of the vineyards are run under a sustainable wine growing program, which is basically generally accepted as a commercial form of organics. It's not organics. I'm not trying to say it's organic, but it's pretty close to it. There's also a lot of vineyards in Central Otago now running under straight organics, and there's a few going under biodynamics. So that low humidity makes that job a whole lot easier. You just don't have any fungal problems. You don't get the rots that you get with like downy mildew and botrytis. And you don't get a lot of pests and diseases up here because minus 15 in the winter tends to take care of most sort of bugs and insects. So it's as far as that goes, it's a relatively easy place to do those, you know, to do that as a philosophy of organic. So
just on sustainable viticulture in its own right, you described it earlier as a form of organics. Where is it similar? Where is it different?
Well, it's actually pretty much a very easy way to sum it up is it is a typical form of organics, but under the sustainable program, you can use Roundup, which is a herbicide under your vines.
Yep.
So if you actually took out the herbicide component being Roundup, then you would be extremely close to being straight organic. So it's an auditable, you get audited, you have to prove that you are actually sustainable. It's not something you say, oh, look, I am sustainable, but I'm driving my tractor at night time, you know, firing the chemicals on. It's about maintaining the integrity of the land in a way or a form that is beneficial to the land and beneficial to the grapes and beneficial to the consumer. So it's about changing your whole thinking process. Like, you just don't go... The old way of actually, say, for example, looking after powdery mildew, which was to put sulfur, which is an organic compound, on your vines... Mm-hmm. It's a 14-day cycle, so everyone would in the past would have put sulfur on every 14 days. But under a sustainable system, you actually check the weather forecast or you check the weather that's been, because some weather patterns don't allow for the propagation of the powdery mildew spores.
Yep.
So instead of putting it on 14 days because it's a Tuesday, you might actually look at the weather charts and go, well, actually, there were 5 days in there that didn't actually suit Paleogym, which I'm not going to put it on. I'll wait for till the 28th day when I think that that might actually be applicable.
Yeah.
And you don't, you have to monitor them. You don't just go and put water on because you think it's actually, you, you need a beer or you're thirsty and your clothes are drying on the washing line. You actually checked water monitors to see what the vines are actually requiring. So it's, you just don't go and use up resources. Like, you just don't go and use water because you can. You go and check that the vines, A, require them and that, that it's beneficial. And there's lots of process, like, just don't drive your tractor up the rows because you can. You have to use the tractor, you know, minimum amount of times and put wider tires on it so there's actually less impact on the soil so it doesn't break down and compact the soil and squash the worms and all those sort of things, or use up, you know, diesel. And so it's more, it's about being custodians of land in a way that is completely sustainable but beneficial.
Who sets the rules?
Well, it originally came out of Switzerland, I gather, but there's a sustainable grape-growing council within New Zealand. As I say, totally auditable. You get accredited. You can put a sign on the gate if you want to that says, you know, these are... It's a great concept. The problem with it is, the problem is not a philosophical one. The problem is actually an educational one. People understand organics. Mm-hmm. People understand if you put organic on your label, they understand what organic means, and it's a it's a feel good factor. If you put on your label of your wine, these wines are grown under sustainable viticulture practices, people don't know what it means. So my only concern is that that's probably not the right word in the meantime. That there is, it's a fantastic philosophy, and I think all New Zealand vineyards have to be run under sustainable viticulture by 2012.
That's been set by the Wine Growers Association.
Correct. So it's not as if there's actually going to be a plan A or a plan A. That is the plan, and that you have to be able to do it. So
why is that? Have they got some legislation that's forcing New Zealand growers, or is it?
Oh, look, I think it's just one of those things of being proactive. You know, we've got the opportunity to do it. We're in a land which is, you know, this pure discovery, or this, you know, this whole image that New Zealand has of this clean green environment. You have to sort of walk the walk, not just do the talk. So we have to be seen to be actually doing as much as we can, because, you know, it's the marketing of the wines, it's a tough environment. So any little factors that we can have which help with the marketing of the wine and this image that New Zealand has out there, we have to maintain it. Like, you can't just sort of go, well, that's what we used to be seen as, but we're not anymore. You know, we have a great opportunity to put our hand up and say, well, we are going to be the cleanest, greenest, purest country in the world making fantastic wines, and you know, they're enjoyable, they're great wines, but you'll actually enjoy them even more knowing that they've actually had very little impact on the environment, if not they've been promoting it. So it's I think it's a great philosophy, but it's one which is easily achievable, and it's one that the consumers seem to be latching onto, and especially if there's actually no downside for them.
Just finishing up, I noticed you guys won an award for your architecture on your winery.
Yep.
What's the idea of the... Because it's almost like a huge flowing...
Wing, you can say it.
Well, I wanted you to say it.
It's a wing.
Yeah, lift off?
No, the wind comes from the other direction, luckily. It's no, it is. It's a nice building. I mean, you could have actually... We finished the building in 2003, and it won several international awards. One was based out of London by a magazine called AR&D for the best piece of emerging architecture in the world back in 2004. And then it won the New Zealand Supreme Architecture Awards the same year, which is pretty hard not to win after you've won the best one in the world. So
yeah.
It would have been a big call.
If you come third or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, and then it was also rated in one of the New York papers, the New York Post, as one of the top five wineries in the world to go and visit. So, look, there's a couple of aspects. It's it was more to try and do something different on the landscape, because it's a fairly unique landscape. Like, there's no vernacular here. There's no building style that says this is what Central Otago building should look like. But we wanted to sit something on the landscape, and the winery itself is pretty much buried underground completely. So that takes away a lot of the
heat,
temperature variations of plus 35 to minus 15, but it also takes away the size. Like, it would have been a big building on the landscape, so we buried it. And then the roof was actually based on the avian theme with the two birds that we have as brands, the peregrine being our little native falcon, and the saddleback being another one of our rare birds. That the avian theme, so the wing of the roof, which is about 150 metres long, does look like the wing of the bird, and it works extremely well as part of the brand. So it was trying to be part of a branding exercise, really, where people look at that building in a photograph and go, that must be Peregrine's Winery in Central Otago, New Zealand, because that's the only winery building I've ever seen that looks like that. So that might take 5 years, or it might take 50 years, or it might take 100 years, but people will get the click of it. So, although one dear old lady did actually ring me up about a week after it was finished and said, "Mr. Hay, I've just driven past and your roof's collapsed on your building." So I said, "Thanks, dear, at least you noticed."
Excellent. All right, I think we'll wrap it up there, Greg. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks very much for the interview.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Greg. It puts a bit more flesh on the bones of sustainable viticulture, although I'm still having trouble fully understanding it. It does appear to me to be a bit like organics for commercial wineries, but with use of herbicides, it's certainly not an organic. Next week, we're going to be looking at wine education. With New Year's resolutions starting to fade in our minds, we'll find out about how you can learn more about wine. We start with Nikki Garrett from the University of Cirencester, and she runs the MBA on wine. So we'll be talking to that next week. So until then, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.